Welcome to the first official episode of Underrated Podcast. My name is Q, and I'll be your host through this wacky world of wonder. We start with Warehouse 13. I will recap the episode and kind of do a reflection on it, and then I'll cover an artifact of the week. I don't know how many people are familiar with Warehouse 13. It was a little show filmed in Canada before filming in Canada was cool, and it premiered on Sci-Fi right around the name change. So if you're familiar with that, Sci-Fi changed his name from SCIFI to the hip cool SYFY. I don't know. I'm not a TV producer. I don't understand it. Right now you can, as of this recording, you can catch Warehouse 13 on Amazon Prime, iTunes, YouTube, I think Vudu as well, all for a price. Of course, you can get the DVDs, like I have, because I'm that big of a nerd. So let's just jump right in to the pilot part one. It was directed by Jace Alexander, who also will come back and direct at least another episode, if not more. The story was written by Brent Moat, Jane Espenson, and the teleplay was written by Moat, Espenson, and David Simpkins. David Simpkins worked on things like Adventures in Babysitting, Charmed, Dark Angel, another one of my genre classics that I think is underrated. Maybe I'll cover that in the future. Jane Espenson, I mean, I'll cover her more later. She's kind of a name in the genre television area. So let's get started. The episode opens on Joanne Kelly's lovely face in a museum. Get used to me saying that. I will defend Joanne Kelly until the day I die. She is playing the no-nonsense agent Micah Baring, and when we meet her, she is giving a rundown of the assignment to her boss. And then we are introduced to Pete Latimer, played by Eddie McClintock. Yes, I have met him at a con. He was lovely. Showed me pictures of his dog. My sister and I stood up there and talked to him for much longer than I expected to. He was great. Anyways, so we meet him in his boxers with a lady friend, and I think that pretty much sets up Pete right then and there. Back at the museum, we meet the scientist Gordon cleaning an Aztec bloodstone, and he bleeds on it. And I think you can see where this is going. It does not look good for Gordon. We get a Bond-like montage, not that kind, the James Bond-like montage, with Pete as he gets dressed. He's going to the gala at the museum that we saw Micah working earlier. Speaking of, she intercepts Pete at the door. He wrote the protocol, apparently, that they are running tonight, but she tweaked it because that's what she does. And Pete apparently gets vibes that are his kind of calling card. And apparently his specialty is in logistics. So then we cut to another area in the museum, and a mysterious Saul Rubinek appears. He zaps an agent. He puts on purple gloves. On the DVD commentary, Saul Rubinek talks about how he was cast basically a couple days before they started filming, so he didn't know what he was getting into, maybe. But he does fine. Gordon, our old pal Gordon, isn't looking too hot. There's a kerfuffle, and Micah pulls a gun from her garter, which is just amazing. and Pete goes after that old bloodstone. Well, Gordon, he tries to kill people. That's not nice, Gordon. Saul Rubinek pours some mysterious purple goo over the stone, and Gordon passes out. And then we meet the lovely CCH Pounder playing Mrs. Frederick. She shows up at Pete's and offers him endless wonder. Apparently, he would work for her and not for his old boss, Dickinson, and that he's headed to South Dakota. Yay! Everyone loves South Dakota. Which then Pete drives through a title card of South Dakota - the Badlands. And these title cards are gonna be really fun. So if you're watching along, those are definitely a treat to watch out for, and I think the graphic design folks had a good time with that. He arrives at middle of nowhere, rusty industrial hangar, and who else is there? Micah! Our old pal Micah. Yay! They start chit-chatting and kind of wondering what they're doing there. And then Saul Rubinek, whose name is Artie, I will stop calling him Saul Rubinek probably, he mysteriously shows up and tells them that he was fixing the fish. Ooh, mysterious. He also made cookies. Less mysterious. They walk through this, like, plastic tunnel-looking thing, and apparently it has bombs and a retina scanner. And then we get our first look at Warehouse 13 proper. And guess what? It's bigger on the inside. It is massive storage. I think there's a whale, if you look closely, so that's funny. Artie calls it America's Attic. It will have other nicknames, so pay attention to that. Maybe I'll keep a running list. And that brings us to the title and the credits. Now, that's a pretty long opening sequence, as far as I'm concerned, but it pretty much sets up the episode and characters and all that kind of good stuff. After the credits roll and we get the fun opening sequence, Micah says that she feels that she's being wasted as a gatherer of secrets. And she's talking to former boss now, Dickinson, who doesn't know what's going on. Fun fact about Micah, she doesn't eat sugar. Quote unquote, doesn't eat sugar. Keep that in mind. Apparently, Artie is mysterious in other ways than fixing the fish. He knows secrets about Pete and Micah. He mentions that he knows Pete goes to AA meetings, and he says something about Denver to Micah, which we will find out more about in the future. So then we get a little background about the warehouse. Apparently, it was built in 1898. Edison built the bioelectric vehicle that they're using to get around the warehouse. Apparently, he built it for Ford. It uses the electricity from people's bodies, so everyone has to keep their hands on at all time. You might imagine that's a bit tricky for our two favorite agents. And then we see a static electricity ball come down the aisle. Pete is really getting into it. Micah, ever the straight man, is pretty skeptical about the whole thing. Artie explains that the goal of Warehouse 13 is to take the unexplained and tuck it away like Pandora's box, which just happens to be in aisle 989B, in case you were wondering. And that's one of the things that I adore about this show, is just those little tweaks that if you're not paying attention, you will miss, which is fine, but it really adds to the show and just the charm of the whole thing that they have something like that. So Pete picks up a tea kettle. As we will find out, Pete has a hard time keeping his hands off of things, especially artifacts. The tea kettle apparently grants wishes, and Micah makes a wish, but a ferret pops out of the tea kettle. Apparently, if you make a wish that can't be granted, you get a ferret. And that is our introduction to Pete the ferret. As they are leaving the aisle, something falls into Micah's bag. The tag on the shelf says that it belonged to Harry Houdini. Artie gives us the line that we will hear over and over and come to love, that they go out and they snag it, bag it, and tag it when dealing with artifacts. So then we get a little tour through town, and Micah and Pete end up at Lena's Bed and Breakfast. And Lena is the lovely owner of the B&B. That's why they put her name on it. She's kind of ethereal and part of the mystery, apparently. She looks at both of them and she seems to read them, kind of. You know, she gives them the up down, tries to measure them. And then Micah hears this disembodied voice say, "Hey, bunny," which is really weird. And we will find out more later, but the mysteries just keep stacking up. On the Farnsworth, which is their communication device, Mrs. Frederick tells Artie that he has to lock in Micah and Pete. So apparently there's some sort of urgency here to getting Micah and Pete to agree to work at the warehouse. We move to later that night when Pete and finds Micah staying up late. Apparently neither of them can sleep. And we learn that Pete knows constellations and that his dad taught him, and his dad was a firefighter, but he has passed away. And Micah, eating a cookie, I might add, she is from Colorado Springs. Her dad owns Baring & Sons bookstore, even though they don't have any sons. She says that her mom is proud and that her dad is not, as far as her career is concerned. So, and that's something about Micah's character that will come up again. Artie is going to be sending Micah and Pete out to Iowa with a portable neutralizer, a list of approved questions to ask people, and a Farnsworth, which is created right after the TV by Farnsworth, and they get one Tesla gun. And I forget watching this, going back and watching this, I forgot that they started out with one Tesla gun and that they tried to keep track of the charges that it had, which will come up later, but it just caught me off guard this first time seeing it. And we'll talk about the Tesla gun and other Tesla accoutrements later. And apparently, Lena found Houdini's wallet in Micah's stuff. She neutralized it, but apparently it is an artifact that makes you hear or see dead people. So keep that in mind for Micah in the future. And that's where the pilot ends. So that's where, well, the first episode, it's split up into two episodes. It's one of those pilots. So that's where I'm going to stop my recap, because that's where the show thought that we should stop. So as far as thoughts about this first hour of the pilot, splitting it into two was unnecessary, especially for the story, the plot that they place on it. But I understand they have to set up who these people are, kind of give you the shorthand of their characters. You know, Micah is the no-nonsense one, Pete is the funny one, that kind of stuff. Artie's the grumpy one, Lena's ethereal and mysterious and all that kind of good stuff. She reads people's auras. So I get that. But I think it's entertaining enough that it would keep people coming back, which is always a good thing. That's kind of the goal. You want people to come back. I think I will save my final thoughts for the end of part two, which hopefully should be up by the time this goes up. I want to post both parts so that you can finish the pilot and have it all together. I have some production notes here as far as the show and, well, the production of it. It's right there in the name. Apparently, and the name of these two episodes, they refer to it as pilot. So it doesn't have a catchy name or anything funny. It's just pilot, which just entertains me. So this, like I said earlier, this marked the first series debut after Sci-Fi changed its name from SCIFI to SYFY. People were in an uproar about that, again, trying to be hip and cool. I don't know why they changed their name. I didn't think it was that big a deal, but whatever. People have their opinions, it's fine. Eddie McClintock and Joanne Kelly have talked in numerous interviews about how they basically were Pete and Micah in real life. They talk about their audition and when they read for each other, that read with each other, that they fell into it 100%. Eddie was kind of annoying for Joanne and was just kind of trying to prank her and that kind of stuff, and she just basically turned into Micah and told him to cut it out and all that kind of good stuff. So I think that really helps the show because they lean so heavily on their characters and do character work that it's nice when the leads can have that chemistry, that interaction. So that's really nice. By the numbers, this was the most watched cable show on its night. So that's nice. And it earned Sci-Fi its third best premiere after Stargate Atlantis and Eureka. The reviews for the pilot are pretty mixed, and I have to say I pretty much agree with them. Again, it's a pilot, so it sets things up, so there's a lot of explaining things and talking about who people are and all that kind of good stuff. And same thing, we've seen kind of the dynamic that Micah and Pete have before, and I'll touch on this again as we go along, but I think the strength is that they set it up as kind of, not a cookie cutter, but as something you've seen before, and, you know, X-Files and Castle and Bones, we see one straight-laced partner and one kind of out there emotional partner, and hilarity ensues. So I think Warehouse 13 will set itself apart just by the fact of its setting and plots and where they take the characters, I think is really interesting. And they can go weird places because of the show. So I think that really helps. And I will talk about that, like I said, a little later. At the end of the second episode. Yeah, I pretty much have to agree with the reviewers when they say that it's kind of mixed. So that brings us to our artifact of the week. And I mentioned it before, and this week we are going to cover the Farnsworth. The Farnsworth on the show, what they refer to as their Farnsworth, is a two-way audio-video communications device that was invented by Philo Farnsworth, apparently in 1929, soon after the invention of the television. And this is, again, part of what I love is that about this show is that they take these real-life things that exist, Tesla, Edison, Farnsworth, other things that will come up, and there's just enough truth in what they have that makes it completely believable that you would think, yeah, of course, why wouldn't Farnsworth keep working on, you know, his tubes and sending radio waves and all that kind of good stuff to a communication device. So I really enjoy that. The warehouse agents use them because they are on their own secure frequency and they can't be hacked. So they'll play around with that a little bit in the future. We'll see that. You can jam the signal and intercept it, and that'll come up later. For more on Philo Farnsworth, I highly recommend checking out the Stuff You Missed in History podcast that covers his life. He was super fascinating. He invented this stuff, and he took on RCA, the big company, and all sorts of things. He was pretty much inventing stuff right out of grade school, so it's pretty interesting. The company Quantum Mechanics, spelled with an X, was licensed to make the props, and they created replicas. Apparently, iPhone also had an app that is now defunct that was basically, I don't know, you could play around like you had a Farnsworth. I don't know, I'm an Android user, sorry, iPhone folks. I know on the Android, you could definitely get the notification sound, so yes, for a while, my phone did sound like the Farnsworth for some time. It's really jarring if you're not expecting it, actually. That is all I have for you lovely folks in this first episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and I want to hear from you. So you can follow me on Twitter at _ratedpod, or shoot me an email at info.underrated@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Are you new to Warehouse 13? Are you old hat and you're just doing a watch through? Anyways, who's your favorite? Obviously, mine is Micah. Okay, I will catch you later with the second episode of the pilot. Peace, nerds.